Views. My name is Garland Nixon on Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. I want to thank everybody who really stepped up to the plate during Fund Drive. You know, the people.
This is a pre-recorded show. Again, this is a pre-recorded show. Garland Nixon will be back on next week.
Drive. People really did what they had to do to help keep WPFW going, to help, you know, represent this show. I feel like as a member of the WPFW family, it is my duty to work as hard as I can to try to support the station. I feel that it is extremely important, and I worked hard, and the people on this show worked hard, and everything came through, and guess what? I think we're still on the air. And also, I want to thank my main man, Kalia. He puts up with the madness of this show and does a fantastic job keeping us going. All right, let's get going. We got a guest. The Black People's March on the White House will assemble at Malcolm X Park in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, November 1st at 11 a.m. The march will be followed by a conference on Saturday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we have with us now the leader of the Uhuru organization. It's also known as the African People's Socialist Party, the one and only Brother Omali Yashetele. Brother Yashetele, welcome back to WPFW.
Thank you so much. It's very, very, very good to be with you, and especially to talk about the Black People's March on the White House and the conference that's going to be following that march on the White House. So it's an extraordinary moment in history right now for our people, and much of the seriousness of the moment is concentrated right there in Washington, D.C., perhaps the vast majority of it in one way or another. So it's going to be good to participate in this mobilization. It's good to be, you know, here with you, PFW.
I think it is important. I mean, today we're reading once again, you know, the Bolivarian Revolutionary Government of Venezuela, you know, they're threatening them to attack them just to steal their oil. And, you know, it's important that we all stand up against imperialism. So talk about this, the coalition, the Black is Back coalition, the march, and kind of what the coalition is about and what your demands are, et cetera.
Well, the coalition was founded in 2009, and had our first mobilization march in the White House. It's something like 9 months following the inauguration of Barack Hussein Obama. In fact, it was an inspiration because many people assumed that the election of Obama and with his help meant the end of the oppression of African people in this country. And so in the 1960s, we'd seen so much of our movement destroyed. Panthers killed one of the number of people who became political prisoners, people locked up, and the whole revolutionary movement slandered. And at that time, in the 1960s, we were pretty clear, not just in this country, but revolutionary movements were happening around the world. In fact, that was the main trend in the world was revolution, oppressed people trying to overthrow the chains. That was true in this country as well. And part of what we felt with the creation of the Black is Back Coalition was an absolute need to hold together an incoherent movement. The movement had become incoherent. As I mentioned, many of the people had been assassinated who were in that movement. Our organization had been destroyed. Our members had been dispersed. And we had an incoherent movement. Instead of a movement against colonialism as it had come to be understood, not just within the United States, but globally. Now we found ourselves fighting to make white people like us, or fighting against racism, or something to that effect. So this is a really important moment, and the coalition was founded in part to pull all of us back together. And so right now, it consists of something like 17 different organizations crossing the political spectrum. And again, our objective is to build an anti-colonial movement with an extraordinary urgency associated with it, given the period that we're living in right now.
It seems to me that this is a more important time than ever for this type of action, for people to start coming together, for them to be organized, for them to be educated about what they're up against. As it seems to me right now, we're watching the demise of the empire and the colonial powers faster than ever. They seem desperate, which makes them dangerous. Your thoughts?
Yes, I think that's true. But their demise does not necessarily mean power for our people. And that's why we say don't agonize, organize. And we say that in part because we know that so many people have been terrified by the rise of this particular regime in the United States, and we see the collapse of the public collapse, and sometimes actually democratic collapse, by which I mean it's something that many people support. We have to remember that on both occasions, the last two occasions, one where he won the election and the next time where he said he didn't win, Trump won, got something like 57% of the vote of white people in this country. He's got that vote again. And not only does he have that vote, he has the largest number of percentage of Africans voting for him that's ever supported a Republican presidential candidate since in recent history. So it's a popular, it's a democratic repression that we're looking at, where people have signed on to the agenda that he's forwarding. And like in the last few days, and it's an anti-African agenda. It's an agenda to deepen the colonial domination of the peoples of the world and Africans in this country as well, who've been central to the struggle against colonialism and undermining the capacity of the United States government to carry out its reactionary mission around the world. We see that just recently, I think perhaps it was today, he put a cap on the number of refugees who allowed to come into the United States. It's the lowest cap that's ever in the history. And the majority of those people who he's allowing to come into the country are white people from South Africa who have claimed that they are being oppressed in South Africa by black people there. It's another signal, along with the National Guards in Washington, D.C., the threat for them to be in Chicago and Milwaukee and Baltimore and various other places where African people are predominant population. It's a war that's nakedly being attacking African people, and the old boogeyman that's been here for a long time, that's been accepted by many of the people in this country, that African people are a criminal population. And so he's doing this to cure crime, he says. And so just recently, I think it was the 25th of last month, he along with the Secretary of War, as they renamed this, appropriately named the so-called Secretary, the Department of Defense, they've determined that they're going to start using, this is from the President of the United States, that our community should be used to bring the war home. This is what he spoke to hundreds of generals, admirals, top brass in the U.S. military, saying that they should now begin using our communities as training grounds for U.S. federal military forces. This is an attack even on the rules and acts that had prevailed for the longest period of time, which prohibited the U.S. troops being used for crime fighting inside the United States. So it's a very, very important and perilous moment right now. So, yes, we're looking at a situation where the crisis of the system is so deep, so profound, that they're actually cannibalizing the basic rights that they say are foundational rights, the basic rights they say are what helped to define the United States for what it is. The Bill of Rights has been shredded, the attack on me and other people being examples of, as we characterized at the time, the canary in the coal mine, where I was arrested along with two other members of our movement and put on trial for talking, for speaking, and claimed that the work we were doing for reparations, the work we were doing that had collected 130,000 signatures from people calling on the United Nations to investigate the United States violation of the Genocide Convention of 1948 as it relates to African people. He was saying, they're saying all of this was the Russians paid to do this. It was Russia who did this. And so they said they were not planning to put us in jail for 15 years because we said these things, but they're doing it because they said the Russians told us to say it, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, black people have been talking about reparations forever, you know, and the question of genocide. In 1948, when this convention was created, well, just 3 or 4 years after, a number of African people went to the United Nations Recharge Genocide was the claim, in a huge document that was turned into a book that people can Google and find today. Recharge Genocide is something that we were saying about African people in this country today. So this is what gives a special kind of significance, we believe, to the situation today. It's not enough to be able to recognize the crisis the system is in. If this is to be meaningful for us, it has to be advantageous for us. Again, don't agonize, organize. And by organize, we're not talking about just passing out a flyer or getting a lot of likes on social media. We're talking about we have to go into our communities and do the kind of work that we did as SNCC, that we did as the Black Panther Party at some juncture in our history. This was where they, at the moment where they attacked us. We have to control our communities. This is fundamental. This is what Malcolm talked about. This is what Garvey talked about. This has been fundamental. And what has happened in the recent period is that people have betrayed our movement and have actually undermined the preparedness of our people by making some assumption that we can have our freedom by making America like us. We can have our freedom by fighting against racism, which is something that actually supports the system, because if the only problem in this country is that white people don't like us, or that that we are fighting to join the system itself, then that validates the very same system that's oppressing us, and that's what we have to move against. So it's a really important thing. So as you mentioned, tonight, there's going to be a pre-rally that's happening at the Black Workers and Wellness Center. That's at 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue Southeast. And that's going to be important, where people will connect with each other. People will be making signs and learning chants and things like that, slogans that will be taken out the following day. And then on Saturday, on November 1st at 11 a.m., the 1 D.C. Black Workers and Wellness Center, again, that's going to be at 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue Southeast. On Saturday, November 1st, at 11 a.m. at Malcolm X or Meridian Hill Park, there's going to be music, culture, speakers, a whole bunch of great people are going to be there from around the country. A lot of Africans, a lot of young Africans, a lot of women are going to be represented on those platforms, et cetera. And so there's going to be a rally that starts at 11. As I mentioned, a lot of speakers, a lot of culture will be there. We will have people there like Lisa Davis, who is the vice chair of the Black is Black Coalition, Akile Anai, who is over information for the African People's Socialist Party, who is also part of the steering committee of the coalition. We will have Zaki Baruti, who is a veteran in the movement coming out of St. Louis with the Universal African People's Organization. There will be Yejide Oronila, who is based right there in Washington, D.C., who is also the leader of the African National Women's Organization. Lukade Maku, who is an extraordinary young leader also, who is the new leader of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. These are just some of the people who are going to be there, and it's going to be an exciting, powerful, dramatic kind of rally. And then we're going to march on the White House. And then on the following day, Sunday, November 2nd, we have a conference that starts at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. That's at Fairfield Inn by Marriott. That's at 2305 New York Avenue Northeast on the second floor, the Capitol Room, where we'll be having serious discussions about the kinds of things that we have to do in our communities, and things that we have to take out into the world, given the current climate and the level of organization that we have to achieve. And in this conference, we'll have a workshop on knowing your rights. What are your rights, at least the presumption of rights in the Constitution, which is really important for us to be aware of, so that when we make these struggles, even though the U.S. Government is ignoring these rights, and why shouldn't they? The fact of the matter is that when the Bill of Rights and First Amendment, the Constitution was created in 1797, I think it was, African people were property. So it was not meant for us. But these are rights that they claim to be legitimate. They claim these to be universal rights and things that are supposed to work for us. So that we are going to be pushing this. We are saying we're not asking you to become African internationalists. We're not asking you to become anti-colonialists, talking to the government and people who are associated with the government. What we are demanding of you is that you live up to what you say you believe in, what you say your principles are. And this is something that is really important because there are many people who believe in these principles that's found in this document that need to be able to see the contradictions that we're looking at. There's going to be an organization, Unión de Barrio, who is a Mexican organization based primarily in California, and who's been doing extraordinary amount of work, community defense work, concentrating primarily on ICE raids and things like that. So they're going to be doing a workshop, you know, how to defend our communities and being able to transfer what they have come to understand, what they know, so that we can know that. We're going to be having a workshop on what to do when the FBI comes, because there's an assumption that they're going to come because they've come to other people. I understand that even now, Black Rights Movement is something that has been being targeted by the Justice Department. I don't know what that means. They say it's about money and things like that. But the point is, I think that the African movement and African people are under serious assault right now, and we have to organize. And there's a difference in organizing and passing out a flyer or getting a lot of likes on social media. So we also have a workshop on a movement to overturn FARA, the Foreign Agent Registration Act, which is what which is akin to what they charged me with, and people in our movement. This whole notion that somehow we are employees of a foreign government, which is something they can do anything time they want to. Well, the jury said that they knew that we didn't work for a foreign government, so that we didn't do that. But they also charged, which was, and if they had convicted us on that, that would have been 10-year sentence. But the jury did convict us on conspiring to do something that never happened. We conspired to do this without registering, work for a foreign government without registration. And so it's a thought crime. Didn't have to do anything. The presumption here by that they put forward is that we thought about doing it. So this is a very serious and tenuous situation. By the way, I think it's important to mention that it was the Biden administration that made these charges against us. So the question is colonialism. It's not the Democrats or the Republicans as such. It's whoever is carrying out the colonial mission. Whoever controls the capacity to carry out the colonial mission, that's who does it. I mean, it was Republicans and Democrats together, Kennedy and Eisenhower. Eisenhower going out, Kennedy calling in, that got together and overthrew and murdered Patrice Lumumba. It was the Democratic Party under the great liberal Lyndon Baines Johnson that initiated the coup against Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana. So these are the kinds of things that we have to deal and contend with. And so it's a very important moment, and I hope the people who are listening to us now will feel compelled to come out and not agonize, but organize and learn how we can go into our communities to participate in taking all of the ideological, political, and organizational territory that exists in these communities that we live in, the schools that we go to, etc.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Chairman Omali Yeshitela of the African People's Social Party, also the Uhuru Movement. The Black People's March on the White House will assemble at Malcolm X Park in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, November 1st. That's tomorrow. So be it Malcolm X back. Oh, and by the by, just so everybody knows, I will be out of the country next Thursday for about a week or so. I'm going to at least make at least one, maybe two shows to leave behind, but I will be traveling to Istanbul, Moscow, Eastern Europe, various places. I'm going to hit a number of places while I'm out. But I will be there. I'm doing some interviews and doing a whole lot of stuff, just traveling around this beautiful green globe that we have, to places where I can meet people. What's the old saying? Go make friends and meet people. At any rate, so the number is 202-588-0893. And it was interesting listening to Brother Yashitali, because he was discussing his plight, wherein during the Biden administration, you know, he was raided by the FBI, and, you know, and then that's just the history of America. The history of America is when you have organizations that are like, hey, the black people aren't being treated fair. Perhaps we should get a good deal. I don't care who's the president. The FBI is going to come knocking on your door and say, hey, don't be giving these black folks notions. Next thing you know, they're going to be upset and saying, we're not getting a fair shot. We can't have that. We'll arrest you and lock you up. That's just the way it goes. All right. 202-588-0893. We got open lines. First call, you on air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Is it me?
It is you. What's happening?
Hey, what's up, Garland? This is Mike from Southeast, brother. What was that march that they doing tomorrow?
It's called the Black People's March on the White House. It's with the Black is Back Coalition. 11 o'clock, Malcolm X Park.
Oh, okay. Too bad you didn't let the brothers stay on a little bit longer so the people can ask some questions, you know, exactly, you know, what their organization is up to. I think it's really good what they're doing, though, but we got to, in order for the black community to have any kind of say, we got to convince our people to start killing each other, man. We got to start having black unity before anything can happen. So, I mean, you can do all the organizing in the world, but if the black community don't have get their act together, start treating each other as enemies and stop hating each other, it's just not going to work. You got to have black unity. You know, I don't know if the brother is, you know, familiar with the movie called The Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. They showcase that black people had a chance to liberate themselves from this system. They just simply won't do it. I advise all black people to watch that. It's called The Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. But anyway, okay. Brother, I want to ask you a question. During this, I think this the shutdown of this government is a blessing in disguise, because the voting public is finally waking up that these two political parties really don't care less about them, and they're using the voters as political pawns to see who can up each other. And yet, you know, people are struggling, you know, and pissed off that they affecting their lives. And when you affect people's livelihood, you know, they're not going to want to really vote for you, or you'd be a fool to vote for the person in any of these parties that destroying your livelihood, and they get to sit back and live the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. They ain't got to worry about losing their paycheck because they getting paid, you know, they making money, you know, doing everything else. But yet the voters are supposed to be stupid enough to believe that these two parties really hate each other. Now, this opens up the door for a third party to blow up the system, to me, you know, to really show these elected officials that they're tired of being used as political pawns. If people vote third party during the midterm elections, down ticket, just keep voting third party, it will start a revolution that, you know, that this country has never seen before, because then these two, the two main parties would stop taking advantage of the voting public. So I think,
well, you know, but Mike, let me say this, you know, Mike, mm-hmm. What we've got, unfortunately, is, you know, I don't even call them political parties. I call them brainwashed cults, because one party gets in, everything screws up. And then the other party says, well, if my party gets in, we'll fix it. Well, they get in and they botch everything up. And meanwhile, the other party just says, well, all we got to do is get my party back in and they'll fix. And we go back and forth every 4 to 8 years, where right now the Democrats, if only the Democrats were back in power, they'd fix everything. Well, they were in power and they didn't fix anything. And that's how the Republicans get in power. And it's just like a ping pong game where people they can't see the system. You know what I mean? They're like, OK, it's the right shoe. No, it's the left shoe.
Well,
the left shoe is running in the same direction. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think some people are slowly waking up, because I listen to other radio stations. Mm-hmm. You know, I see the audience at C-SPAN. They're getting tired of playing these games. conservative radio, people are calling in and saying that they really don't want Trump to use the nuclear option, but they understand that he might have to do that so, you know, kids won't starve in this country. So I think people are slowly starting to wake up. That's why I say that this is a perfect opportunity for the rise of the third party if they have the right message. And to me, I don't see how anybody in a right mind can keep rewarding these elected officials that is making your life a living hell. You keep rewarding them, putting them back in the office for them to only live the lifestyle of the rich and the famous. And
all right. Thanks a lot, Mike. We got a couple more callers. But I certainly appreciate it, man. Appreciate your follow. Well, you know, people are waking up. Hey, you still got some people who I call them the one less concentration camp people. People who, when it gets down to the point, they'll say, yes, I'm voting for the Republicans or whatever. I'm voting for the Democrats. And the other somebody says, yeah, but the Republicans have 10 concentration camps. And they say, yeah, but the Democrats only have 9. Where it gets to the point where, yeah, but they got one less concentration camp. I mean, that's where we are. Both parties are so bad. They're warmongering parties. They're committing genocides. And you can't even make an argument anymore. Hey, putting my party, whatever it may be, in office because they're going to fix things. The only thing they can say now is the other guys are worse. That's the only thing that's left. It's no longer, hey, do you think your party's good? No. So means real, as I keep saying, what difference does it make if you have on a right shoe and a left shoe if both shoes are running in the same direction? Then they're not really right and left. It's just a system. And that's where we are. And some people are waking up and some people have to tell me, no, but Garland, the Democrats really are better. The Republicans really are better as the system. They don't see the systemic nature of politics. Anyway, next, but I'm going to keep preaching that. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
Everybody got some?
You're on the air.
Hello. I am calling from Tacoma Park. My name is Maeve. And I have some ideas about the people that I want to vote for. I don't care if they're Republican, Democrat, communist, Maoist. I don't care. What I want them to talk about is I want them to be committed to term limits. I want them to be committed to age limits for our elected officials. I want there to be a way that we can do national referendums by some rigorous process that includes states and ways that we ensure that things are elevated that matter to the people to our national legislators and through that process. And I want us to stop the gerrymandering and use AI to create districts across this country and let the chips fall where they may. That, to me, is what we need to be voting for to make change happen around the fact that people, our interests are not being represented. So just wanted to share that publicly.
Let me ask you this. I think your goals are worthy goals. I think your ideals are good ideals. But let me ask you this. Our system has fallen to a point where it seems to me that the ruling elite have so much power now. Okay, the things that you want, I think most people want something like that. But do you feel that the system has deteriorated to a point where the ruling elite and the billionaires and have so much power that we can't even, like, if we say, okay, every single working class American wants this, that the few billionaires can thwart it and say, nah, y'all can't have it. Do you think we're there now?
People, and I think that's I understand that you think that the oligarchs may have a hole, but there are far more of us than them. And we just don't, we're apparently not messaging this right. So, I mean, we have to start somewhere. Limiting terms, age limits, because all these folks, I mean, ridiculous people dying in office. Anyway, I'm giving out Halloween candy. I just wanted to share that. Thanks for the
All right. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All right. 202-588-0893. We've got some open lines. We've been, you know, in fun drive for a while and all kind of things going. So I do want to hear what people have to say. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Garland. What's going on? It's Max.
Max.
Calling.
I'm all ears, brother.
Man, so I'm actually here to ask you for some advice today on things that we kind of, like, I think we agree on. I've been debating this Groyper dude, man, and he is, like, he is the most ethno-nationalist guy ever. It doesn't matter if I talk about, like, geography or cultural diffusion in Europe. It doesn't matter if I talk about the Mayans and the Aztecs and Incas, and even though, like, sure, they were flawed, that they were advanced, his philosophy is just white is always better, white is always right, and brown people are going to just destroy the world. And it's like, I can't, like, I get so triggered, and I'm like, you know, maybe Garland could actually give me some assisting here on, like, debating some of these people kind of in the future.
Well, you know what? I'll put it like this. I understand what you're saying, but you know what? Sometimes you got to look at someone and say, you know what? There ain't nowhere for me to go there. I think there's got to be times when you say, you know, I mean, because if you're talking to someone and everything is oversimplistic, they got one answer for everything. What about this? Well, the problem is brown people. I don't know, whatever. And you find when somebody has overly simplistic answers, how do you even have an intellectual conversation with somebody that got the same answer for anything? So maybe the best thing to do is leave it at what you said and move on to greener pastures. You know what I mean? You got to know.
Yeah.
What I think. Some people you just can't. You know.
Wouldn't you agree, though, that, like, Latin America, right? Latin America is so in the situation it is today because of, like, hundreds of years of colonialism and then 85 years of American imperialism. I mean, like, it seems like it's undisputed that, like, that part of the world is just been like just the way in which, like, I mean, education, from even what I read when the Spanish came there and conquered it, education was literally created to be hoarded for the, like, for the elites. Like, it was an elite show. Mm-hmm. Like, because he always talks about, like, race and IQ science, and I'm like, dude, these people malnutrition, they don't have good schools, they don't have good education. Every time they do elect a democratically elected leader after World War II, we overthrow their government. What do you mean, like, how are these people ever supposed to become more advanced and developed if we hinder that possibility?
Yeah, I'm with you. But you know what? Here's the thing. That is a nuanced and complicated conversation, right? Because the conversation is, why are poor countries poor? Now, someone like that wants to say, because they're culturally and intellectually inferior to us. Well, you know what? That would be like saying rich people in America are all rich because they're superior to people that are poor. That's what was the term that was used for that way back in the medieval times? I forgot the term. But at any rate, it's the idea that somebody who was born because their father was a billionaire, so they're rich. And another guy was born because he was born in the ghetto because his parents were impoverished. But the rich guy is smarter. That's why he's rich. It doesn't take into account the complexities of money. It doesn't even take into account the complexities of the economic system that we live in or the economic system in the world. So but again, there's people you just can't get through to sometimes, Max, and it's better to move on. That's my opinion.
Yeah,
he's already got all the answers.
I agree. I guess it's just it's also just, like, sad, like, because, like, even like medieval Europe wasn't a great place, you know, and it's kind of like what you talk about with, like, Zionism too, and, like, Israel, right? Like, you know, like there are Jewish people that are, like, very, like, against it, whereas, like, there are Christians that aren't. And I also, what my problem is that a lot of these nationalists, right, they always talk about, like, the Jews have to go, and it's like, it's like you don't even realize, as much as, like, I'm with you, like, on holding Israel culpable for everything that they're doing now and our support, right? Right, Christians in the medieval time, right? They were the ones expelling all of them. They were the ones killing all of them. The Spanish kings, and then even like World War II. So it's like so much of Western colonialism and imperialism has driven even the plight of what Israel is doing to Palestine today. What, because they always want to blame it on the Arabs and the Muslims, but then it's like, but if you guys hadn't drove them in that direction, right, we might not be in this situation today as well.
I will end this with a famous Zen quote: great doubt, great awakening; little doubt, little awakening; no doubt, no awakening. All right. Thanks a lot, Max. Certainly appreciate it. 202-588-0893. Next call, you on air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
T-Bird from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. What's happening, T-Bird?
Just this. I think I'm going to go against what you just said. There are some simplistic answers that have some truth to them.
Yes.
One of them is that there are rich and powerful interests in the world who want others to fight against each other. And that, essentially, I think it might be a simplistic thing, but I think it explains a lot. We, in South Africa in 92 or 91, just before they got their independence, they got tires and put them over people who were betrayers, people who betrayed the racism and whatever in South Africa. Because rich people, and even afterwards, here in the United States, rich people came and they buy interest and they buy power. I saw a program on YouTube, which I've been watching a lot recently, and it was a program called I've Had It. And they had a black leader, one of the black leaders in today's thing. Unlike in the 70s when we only had 13, now they got 60, and I think at least 36 were named in something in the amount of money that they have. But anyway, this is Cory Booker. And he said something to the effect that he does not take a lot of money from big corporations and big interests. And then one of the two white ladies who were there said, but here it says right here in this, and I don't remember the publication, that you got $800,000 from AIPAC. And boy, was he stuttering a bit after that. But he shouldn't have been, because just about all of the minority conference gets their money from big interest, big money interest. And it just is something that's quietly said. The other simplistic thing that I will say is they take over things that give people information. I heard on this radio station, which lets everybody talk, I heard a lady come on and she, there was a follow-up comment I had made as to the ignorance of somebody coming on saying he was going to help Palestinians by advising them on how to do their roads and administer their water systems and that sort of thing. And he had no, there were two of them, and they had no insight into the effect that colonialism has, where people are colonized and they're made to live a certain way and they cannot travel, they cannot control their water, they cannot control their roads, they cannot even go swimming 16 meters off of the coast without drones shooting them up and whatever. So the control of media and the control of speech and the control of rich people who want us to fight against Spanish or immigrants or them to fight against whites and then whites to fight against blacks or blacks to fight against immigrants and the whatever is a thing that happens. We had a lady came on afterwards and she said, well, it all started October 7th in 2023 and things were fine until then. So we have had no major media still today is not talking about the fact that they have killed those people. They have had multiple campaigns, cleaning of the clearing of the grass, or whatever they call it, mowing of the lawn or something, and that they have starved them people for the last 70-something years after stealing their land and putting them in a concentration camp, not called a reservation like in the United States colonial system.
Well, T-Bird, let me tell you a quick story. When I was in a police academy, I've always been a little bit of a rabble-rouser, a lot of rabble-rouser. I was in a police academy. I was the only black person in the academy. And we had a guy this old guy, and he was talking about he was like 18 years old or something in 1968 or something, whatever year it was, and that he was in the National Guard, and he went to Cambridge, Maryland. H. Rat Brown was there, and he came there, and he talked to the black folks, and they were all upset, and they like burnt a lot of stuff down because it was very bad, of course, on the Eastern Shore of Maryland for black folks at that point. And so he tells us, yes, we went there, and blah blah blah, and we stopped this and this and it. And he says, now, yes, things weren't fair, but you know, we were okay with the way things were. And I stuck my hand up, and he says, yes, Cadet Nixon, and I said, or Trainee Nixon, I said, apparently everybody wasn't okay with the way things were, or they wouldn't have burnt the place down, right? So when somebody says, October 7th, things were fine. Well, apparently they weren't fine with everybody before October 7th because somebody was mad as hell. That's what I have to say. So the idea, you know, that's I always bring this up. That's like saying that the, you know, any rally, any protest, anything that happens, that we start that date, that we don't say, was there possibly anything that happened before? Some guy just walked up and punched somebody. Why? Did anything happen beforehand? At any rate, thanks a lot, T-Bird. 202-588. Next caller. You are on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from? Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from? Oh, we lost that caller, it looks like. Okay, let's go to another one. All right, next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hi, is this me?
Yes, it is.
Hi. I usually am not home at this time, so I don't usually get to listen to the show. But I have a request or a suggestion, because you spend a lot of time talking about the elite and things like that. And I think what would be better and more operative for people would be to discuss what we can do, not in some general aspirational philosophy, but in actual things that people can do in their actual life to make themselves better. Because,
but that's what I got you. Look, that's what I got you. A great caller. It's all that's why I got callers so, such as you. So that's your. Well, this is your opportunity.
Well, I think that's for me. You know, having an hour show, I think you have a responsibility.
Are you there?
Okay.
Sorry, I was losing you for a second. Go ahead. I'm all ears.
Let me give you two examples, because the so-called, quote, elite, unquote, they can't do anything. All they can do is order people to do things. And the people have a choice to comply with the order or not. So here's two examples. There's an easy solution to make Social Security solve it. And I sent you a paper, and I never heard anything from you. What you have to do is remove the cap that they have on wages that are subject to FICA. And, and that will expose everybody's salary, which is now cut off if you make over $175,000. That's not exposed to it anymore. But in addition to removing the cap, you put a floor in. So until you make like $70,000, none of that salary is subject to FICA. So this will make Social Security solvent forever, because the math just, you know, proves that.
I agree.
But it also creates a cushion so that people who are defined by the federal government as poor are no longer having the first dollar out of their paychecks taken out of their, you know, taken away from them, which makes them poor. The second.
Now, let me throw something at you real quick. Let me throw something at you. Brother, I'm in agreement with you. There's one problem with that. You know what that is? Those people that you mentioned that make above 175, and I mean, when I, above, I mean, like they make $1 billion. I mean, these rich people who should be paying their fair share, and if they did, then Social Security would be solvent. We can agree on that. Here's the problem. They're the ones that control the government. They're the ones that own the members of Congress. They're the ones that fund the members of Congress. So that while you and I agree 100%, and I think it's, I couldn't agree with you more. The problem is our government has been captured by the people that you said, we're talking about at the beginning. I said the ruling elite, the rich people have captured the government to a point that a very sensible and reasonable suggestion like you are making right now that all of us want can't get through. Because the majority want it, but that rich minority control the decision makers that would be able to get it through, so they can't.
Garland,
go ahead.
Garland, I disagree with you, because everybody who's a member of Congress was voted in by the 350 million people in this country. So those people are controlled by us. We refuse, as a group of citizens, we refuse to control them. That's on us. Now, the second example that I want to raise is the governor.
All right, you make it
Maine,
quick, because do me a favor. Okay, I want to ask you, because we got a couple more calls and I only got 10 minutes like left. I'll just go ahead and close out. I do want to get some other people
Maine
an opportunity.
And the Attorney General of Arizona, who Johnson has refused to seat their House member who won the special election, they both came out and said, well, you know what? If we don't get the funds that we, the people, provide for the federal government to provide us service, well, we are going to stop withholding federal income taxes. So my point is this. If you play the playing by their rules, you will always lose. And if you're not.
All right. Well, I hate to jump off here because I appreciate it. Great call. And I really appreciate you calling in and being a part of the conversation. And there are a lot of things you're saying I agree with. We may disagree. I think the government has been captured by the ruling elite. You may not. But you know what? This is the conversation we need to have. Thank you very much for calling. Next caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Taboo calling from Washington.
Taboo. What's happening, my man?
First, on the last caller, he's right on one thing I definitely can say. It's upon us. Congress does not listen to us, even though we put them in the office. Now, that's a serious problem. But what I really wanted to talk about with Brother
O'Malley?
Teller that called in, yeah. And my question is, do you see similarities? I wish he had been there because I want to ask him. Do you see any similarities between the way he was treated wrongly by the government and the way Trump was treated wrongly by the same government? And
you know what? I would answer that. I would be happy to answer that for you.
Well, you are, yeah. So I wanted to say,
yeah, I've already said, look, you know, I'm no fan of Trump, but justice, you know, I only believe in justice. In my opinion, I agree with you. It was political. The Democratic Party didn't want Trump to win or didn't want to be him in power. And they charged him with everything but exposing himself to a blind person. And if they could have charged him with that, they would have. They made up everything they could. They charged him with everything. And now that he's going back doing it to them, they're mad. But that's what they did to him. I don't lie. My ideology is way to the left of either of these parties. I don't have no use for Trump whatsoever. But I don't care whether I have any use. At the time they went after Trump and accused him of all that stuff, I was like, yeah, I don't think this is, you know, come on. You really literally in New York, in the state of New York, they literally went in session and changed the law so that one woman could sue Trump. I said, that ain't right. So I agree with you. What they did to the chairman, Yashitelli, was absolutely wrong in his organization. And I do agree with you. They was, even right. though I don't like Trump, even though I don't well, support
right,
him.
Right, right. It's not about like
it. Justice is justice. What they did to Trump was unjust. And in my opinion, it helped him get elected because they made it appear as though Donald Trump was some kind of a revolutionary figure that the system hated. And he's just the opposite. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, true. You're right. Well, you see, the system is controlled by the globalists, the bankers. See, Brother Yassitelli, he's anti-colonialist. Trump is anti-globalist. The same people. You know, different words, semantics, you know, but he's pro-American. And this is how we're to get control of our Congress. They're bought and controlled by big money, and much of it is foreign money, particularly the banks. That's why Trump is hopefully looks like he's getting rid of the Federal Reserve. So,
well, thank you very much. I got a couple more callers, and I appreciate it. And we made this. I don't think Trump is any kind of revolutionary. In my opinion, Trump is actually. I'll make one quick before I call the call. To me, Trump is the most representative of the American system that I've ever seen. He is everything that he absolutely just exemplifies what American is. Trump just don't have a filter. See, usually they put Obama or some nice guy, some good looking guy that talks nice, and then he overthrows Libya. The African country. He bombs countries. He slaughters and murders people. Has every Tuesday, he goes over a list of people that he's going to murder with drones. But he's got on a nice suit and a pretty family, and he sounds good. See, that's what they usually do. They put a pretty face on this ugly monster. Now, Donald Trump is on air, and you can see that monster for what it is, in my opinion. That's my opinion of Donald Trump. I can see the monster for what it is. Anyway, go ahead. Next caller. You're on the phone. What's your name? I mean, excuse me. You're on the air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
Hi, it's Louise from Baltimore.
Hey, great to hear from you. Been a few weeks. What's happening?
Yes. Hi. I wanted to talk about, first of all, I wanted to say that, you know, about us voting we don't have control over the vote because of stuff like Citizens United and the gerrymandering and everything that's going on, which is which disenfranchises our vote. First of all,
I don't trust those machines either. To be frank with you, I do not trust those
machines.
Well,
that's the reason why. Yeah, that's the reason why I supported the backup paper part of the machines. But Also, we have got to stop supporting our own oppression. If we stop putting our money into this capitalist system, the oppression system, we're supporting our own oppression. And I say this to all the Christians out there, that if they cancel Christmas in Bethlehem, then you what is your excuse for going out and buying all these Christmas presents, getting into debt with your credit card and everything? If they could cancel Christmas in Bethlehem, then you have no excuse for support propping up the system. And you could cancel Christmas here too.
All right. Well, we got one more caller. I'm almost out of time, so I got to give them a second. But look, feel free to email me. Email me. My email address is garlandn. That's GARLANDN. garlandn@gmail.com. Oh, y'all, feel free to email me and I'd be happy to, we can continue this conversation later. How's that? All right. Next, last caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Garland, Marvin, Fort Washington. How you doing, man?
I'm just great, brother. What's happening?
Hey, man, if you look at this system for over the last 100 years, every administration has given tax cuts to the rich and boosting the military-industrial complex. People have just been sleek. Under the Obama administration, a lot of us were so emotional. Oh, yeah, the first black president, yeah, but for all his policies, it was just like his policies were just like any other president that sat in that seat. He locked up, prosecuted 8 whistleblowers, 542 drone attacks he signed off on, AFRICOM and Africa all over the world, just oppressed black people all over the world, and took the resources, man. Every administration, Trump administration, is just an extension of this capitalist, imperialist, racist system.
Here. Well, unfortunately, my brothers are giving me the high sign in the studio, so I'm going to have to get ready to run. But I certainly appreciate the call. Feel free to email me and to call. Well, I will be out of the country a little bit, but I will leave some pre-recorded stuff and we'll go from there. I thank everybody. GarlandN@gmail.com. I love my house music. Me and Kalia always prepare something for you. But so here's another great house song on the way out. We're out.
The soul of West Africa lands at Brentwood Arts Exchange's Listening Room on Friday, November 7th at 8 p.m. with Check Up.
WPFW, Washington.
For so long.